What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Depressing Celtics Talk Podcast here on the NBC Sports Boston Podcast Network. Yes, we are bringing the negativity to a whole new level because, well, the Celtics stink. And DJ Bean, I am so sorry to bring you on. I wanted to bring you on in a week where we could have fun and find good things about this team, but that's not happening. The Celtics are a hot mess. I did bring ice cream and two spoons. What the hell is wrong with this team?
I mean, we still can have fun. Good teams. There was a Red Sox team a few years ago, I remember. They fell out of it, and I started watching them more than I usually did because I was like, "Just this is just like a mindless kind of going nowhere team, and let's just have this experience. Let's all laugh at the team together. Let's make jokes about it." That's where we're veering into with Celtics territory. I've watched every game this season, and last night I texted Giles during the game, and I was like, when did it officially occur that like this is what they are? Because there was, I don't know, maybe early February where you're like, man, they stink right now. And at what point did it go from they stink right now to we shouldn't have expectations going into these games? Like when the Celtics fell behind last night, I was like,
seen this movie.
Maybe something exciting is going to happen, but they're not going to come back and win. Luka's going to hit some threes. Like these guys are losers. Watching them, it's like watching a loser team where the game's over in the third quarter and maybe something exciting happens, you know, like you get the steal at the end of the game. And it's like, oh, okay, well, they've cut it now to two at this point, but they weren't going to win that game. So I was very calmly watching that game last night, knowing what the result was going to be and knowing, hey, maybe we'll have a couple of happy moments. That's where we are right now as Celtics viewers.
I mean, that it isn't that telling on its own. You know, we sit there sometimes and we're like, oh man, no one's going to watch this post game show. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably a lot of people hate watching the post-game show. Yes, because like they're as infuriated as I, you know, and I find myself as infuriated as a fan. And I think I told you this, I don't have a rooting interest, but you know, if I'm going to watch this stuff, I don't want to know what the result's going to be. And as soon as it starts going sideways, I go, oh, seen this movie, know how this ends. I don't know what the demarcation point was. You know, they won those four games right before the break. And I said, okay, you know, maybe there's something here, but you know, every time we do that, we realize, you know, there's nothing about this team has been consistent. That was one of only two winning streaks beyond two games this season, which is incredible on its own. And here we are now. They've lost two in a row at home after we thought, after wins in Milwaukee and OKC, that maybe things were starting to trend in the right direction. Their young players, their young stars have been outplayed by Zion Williamson and Luka Doncic. And, you know, all the optimism about having the, you know, the best young duo in the league is a little bit fading. And I will relent. There are 100 excuses you can make for this team and COVID and injuries and all that, but everybody's dealing with something and yet they can't get this team right. What is the most aggravating part about this team, besides the fact that we know how the script seems to play out on a night-to-night basis?
Defense, I guess, that at some point, one way or another, you end up talking about how the team doesn't defend well or how the team defends lazily, whatever it may be. And you put that on Brad Stevens, you put it on whoever you want. But to me, I'm like, all right, then let's talk about the leaders. Let's talk about the heart and soul players. Marcus Smart, good defensive player, obviously. But if the team isn't playing defense, if the team defense isn't good, that everyone tells me is an effort thing. That's a paying attention to details thing. So how good is your leadership really if your team just lets players absolutely light them up? Gary Washburn after the game, God bless him last night. You said, are people going to watch post game? I'm watching every second of it because Chris, not trying to blow smoke, you, Gary Washburn, the Celtics writers and the media, I find this more fascinating than anything that's happening on the court where the mirror is being held up to these guys. So Gary Washburn after the game asking Jaylen Brown, like, hey, man, players know they can come in and embarrass you right now. And I never thought that would be the case with the Celtics. And I never thought that the conversation would become this honest about the Celtics, but I certainly didn't think this is the product that we'd be seeing. So probably the defense, the pulse on the team, et cetera, et cetera.
Let's go down that road because you asked me before we jumped on about, like, you know, I think it's true. The Celtics media, you know, we've been described as green teamers, you know, on certain radio programs, and that's fine. Like, there was a stretch, and I've said this multiple times, from 2013 until 2017, where Danny Ainge hit on just about every move he made. It was the ultimate GM heater, and I found it hard to complain about the state of the team. You know, if Danny's making all the right moves, if Brad is getting the most out of the Evan Turners and Jared Sullingers and all this, and making this, taking this, these like ragtag teams to the Eastern Conference Finals, what is there to lament? Well, ever since 2018-19, things have not been so rosy. And I think it's fair to criticize the decisions that the GM has made, the coach's inability to steer his team back on track when it encounters adversity, and the coach's inability to maximize the talent. And certainly the players this year deserve a ton of blame for what I'm seeing on the court. And so it is refreshing to hear us be sort of brutally honest about this. And I just think, you know, we're not saying anything that people don't know. You know, you can watch this team and you're like, this is not a good product. And so, you know, I know it's not fun for the players to have to sit there and answer those questions, for Danny to get grilled on the radio every week, for Brad to have to sit there and express his own frustration. But, you know, I hope they're having those hard conversations behind closed doors, because this should be easy. You know, like, these are the questions they should be asking themselves. And I agree. I don't understand it. Like, how do you go from the fifth best defense in the league, virtually the same personnel, to 23rd or 24th, whatever the number is now at this point? To me, it all comes down to they just don't want to try hard enough. It's like, and that is so damning. You know, they just don't want to put in the effort to be good. And I don't know how they can sort of be okay with that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's two things then, right? That would have to be Stevens, or that would have to be Smart, because we can't say when Smart isn't playing particularly well that, oh, well, he brings all these other things. He's just this heart and soul guy. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, breaking news. Marcus Smart seems like an awesome dude, right? Everybody, like, he's the person that everyone would like to have in their lives, because he's got a great head on his shoulders. And we've seen things he's done off the court that he is IRL in real life. And like, if he were one of my friends, I would look to him for leadership. But we can't talk about his leadership and how he makes winning plays, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then if the team isn't really following anything, and if the team doesn't really have any sort of direction, and I'm talking about when they're on the court, don't you say, okay, the leadership maybe isn't so hot right now? I mean, obviously we can talk about the winning plays and the most hilarious play in probably Celtics history the other night in that game against New Orleans. But so that's on Smart, I think, some of it. He at least enters into the conversation, and that's on Stevens. If your team isn't playing defense, then typically that falls on the coach. So I'm not saying fire Stevens, trade Smart, but I am saying, like, hey, calls on Smart. Consider the coaching situation going forward. This is where you've gotten. And to your point earlier, we didn't talk about those things before because they weren't issues before. Right now they are.
And it's funny because, like, sometimes I don't even know where to start with what the team is. And so it's so funny because, like, on Twitter, you know, we'll put up something about, you know, why the team is struggling. And you got 84% are mad at Danny, and 74% of the fans are mad at Brad, and more people are mad at there's enough blame pie to go around for everybody. And, you know, sometimes I think we obsess too much about how big the slice is. Like, everybody in this organization to some level has failed this year. And it's okay to admit that. Like, Marcus Smart is not having a good year. Like, that's okay to say. He's not playing defense to the level. He has hinted at something off the court happening, whether that's just the effects of COVID on everybody and the team chemistry. Maybe that's Marcus going through some things in his own world. And that's all fair. Like, that happens. But he has not been to the level of performance that we expect. Jason and Jalen, they have the all-star title. They have not played to the level that we thought they were capable. We had an instance last night where Jason Tatum dribbled the ball for 24 straight seconds. I counted it, 24 dribbles before taking an off-balance runner with like 2 seconds left on the shot clock. And I'm thinking, Brad Stevens' head didn't explode, and I could not believe it, because that is like the absolute opposite of what he would like out of his team. And so it's on Brad for not pulling Jason Tatum out of the game immediately in that instance and saying that's not acceptable. I hate to say, like, I know we do blame pie all the time. I love blame pie.
I'm crazy about blame pie, dude. It's such an easy device, but guys, it's the best.
But
They call it,
isn't it equal slices right now? I feel like it's just, it's on everybody. Everybody is tucked into this blame pie. Everyone except Robert Williams, who is awesome and the only thing that's redeeming about this team. And yet, like, even he, there's just blame pie to go around everywhere.
So I was going to say, like, if we did a draft of people we don't want to give blame pie to, yes, you would probably be Robert Williams. And I just can't envision Mike Zarin ever making a bad decision, man. So I would be like, somehow I bet like Zarin's got nothing to do with this.
Rob, Zarin, Luke Kornet, I think are the top three of my non-blame pie, even though I'm sure I could shoehorn them in somehow.
I think you mean Kevin Gornet. That's my guy right there. But again, so what a loser thing. We're talking about like, Luke Kornet is better than we thought it'd be. Like, we might as well be talking about Morgan Burkhart back when the Red Sox stunk, you know, like some guy you see for a little bit and you're like, ooh, hey, well, he's pretty good. Maybe we'll have a good team at some point. Like, nah, man, we shouldn't be talking about Luke Kornet, but Luke Kornet stuff is exciting. Peyton Pritchard stuff this season has been exciting. And obviously we're hoping for more out of Peyton Pritchard than we are from Luke Kornet, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
we're getting excited about little things. I want to talk about Brad Stevens' head not exploding when Jason Tatum just basically wastes a bunch of time and then takes a ridiculous shot. Brad Stevens' head didn't explode when Marcus Smart lobbed that ball when there was 3.3 yeah, seconds left in the shot clock for the other team. I've said this before where some bad teams, and I would see this occasionally in my NHL days, sometimes a team would just be in a funk and you'd be like, this is a weird funk. I wonder if they're going to get out of it. But there seemed like there was this sort of acceptance or idea that like maybe the team was in on some sort of secret, and the secret is, look, this just isn't like, this just isn't happening this season, you know, where that there seems like there's some sort of resignation. We've seen Brad Stevens sound, I would say, increasingly exasperated, but when you look at him after these moments, he's not really losing it. I remember back when the Celtics were good, you'd hear Stevens screaming during the course of play, broke my heart. One game is, I think it was Tatum's rookie year. He was playing well and he had a lot of points and everything. And at one point you could hear Stevens yell, Jason, compete. And I'm like, man, you are cold, Brad. Like he's got like 17 points. He's a rookie. Like, leave him alone. There just doesn't seem to be this, okay, we're figuring this out and we're like, we've got this. You hear calming words from Jalen last night where he's like, yeah, there are positives we can take from this, but we need to be doing more than that right now. There doesn't seem to be this, hey, we're figuring it out,
right,
type of mentality. There seems to be this, look, what about, I mean, the man just lobbed the ball the length of the court and he didn't need to, and then immediately started arguing. And I needed my player who has a reputation of not having his head in the game, Robert Williams, to come over and be like, Marcus,
just let it go.
Clip where he comes over and he's the friend we've all had him before, where maybe you're in an argument, maybe you're talking about some, whatever it may be, a friend who comes in and is like, dude, I don't know what point you're trying to make right now, but the quicker you drop this, the quicker we won't make fun of you in a few seconds, because like you're in the wrong right now. Williams had to be that dude.
I have spent probably more time than I should have trying to figure out what Marcus's argument could have possibly been. Like, the only thing I can reason is that Marcus asked an official at some point, like, is that like 0.4 on our shot clock? And maybe he heard him wrong. Maybe the ref delivered some wrong information, but Marcus's emphaticness in that moment suggested that he really thought that was the right move. And it's flabbergasting that could happen. Same as you said. And that to me is a microcosm of the season where they lose their head for 0.4 seconds. And that lead went from 3 to 12 and they were out of that game. Like, they made the run late, but like, they just never catch up. Like, as soon as they went down 20 against the Mavericks, I turned to Abby. I said, here's how it's going to go. They're going to make a second half run, but they're not going to have enough gas at the finish line. And Luka was going to win it anyway if it got close. And so that's how it is. I want to read you this quote from Danny Ainge on the radio today with Toucher and Rich. He was kind of pressed on Brad's, how much blame pie Brad deserves. And here's Danny. Everybody is responsible. I'm responsible. Brad's responsible. And then he went on to say, Brad has zero responsibility for us shooting 5 for 34 from three last night, most of them being open shots. He doesn't have responsibility when players improvise and are playing with a lack of emotion after they miss shots. The only thing he could do is yank his best players out of the game and go with the other players. That's the only option he has. There's a lot more there, and mostly about just, you know, they need to play with better effort. And, but when you hear that, I mean, that's a direct shot at Jason Tatum, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a smart shot, I would say, at Tatum, and it's smart because there was a moment in the game, I think it was last week, where Smart takes a three, he's like, nailed it. Not quite Swaggy P, but he takes the three, and there's a long rebound. And if he had just kind of stayed in that play, there's a really good chance at an offensive board. But even that, like, they just kind of take the three, and it's like, all right, prepare to play defense. And, I mean, let's obviously not we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about Tatum, where after he misses a layup, like, he just wasn't finishing at the rim last night, but half the time he wasn't finishing. Immediately it comes with the yelling at the refs, and I'm like, dude, in addition to this being a bad look, it's just not productive. Yep. So that's, I mean, he's the first and foremost, that quote is about Jason Tatum, but there's other guys, man, who just, like, they'll take a shot and they won't have their head in the game. And talking about, oh, have your head in the game is so, I'm going to hold up my shirt. It's so like Mickey Mouse. It's so corny. It's so elementary, but to reference any sports kids movie, when you're playing so poorly, you do kind of have to get to fundamentals and things like, okay, look, when you take a shot, where's your brain going next? What is the next thing you're going to do? And the Celtics don't even have that right now.
There was a play where Tatum missed a shot, was complaining, was late to get back in. It actually managed to get a steal, got back in it quick enough to like pick Luka. And I said, it's too bad because it should have burnt him. Because then you can look at that on film and say, hey, you didn't get back. You didn't make the play. He kind of ass backwards into getting right. the positive play. But I don't think they recognize that if you're not going to attack the basket frequently, if you're just going to settle for these long threes like they so consistently do, you're never going to get those calls. It doesn't matter what your star level elevates to. If you're not consistently attacking the basket, you know, the referees are just not going to give you that call on the one time that you do. And I just, for the life of me, I can't understand how they haven't recognized that. And the hanging your head on bad shots, I understand, like, it's frustrating when, especially on a night like Luka is making, he was in Somerville on one of those three-pointers, and that's infuriating. But that's just what it is. Luka's going to do stuff like that. You need to be able to move on, and this team so infrequently is able to get past that first batch of adversity. Like, there's no reason they should be coming back from 20 down. They should be 10 down, and yet they just cannot put themselves in a mental space to do that.
And, like, so I said last night, I don't think I had any Celtics reads in BST last night, but I was like, I like to stick to the script, maybe sometimes dress it up, put it in my own words, whatever it may be, but our producers write awesome stuff. It always has the right balance of tone, stats, whatever it may be. But I was in my head, I was like, if any script says the comeback fell short, I'm going to mix it up. I'm going to say the Celtics fell behind 23 points and then lost the game.
Yeah.
Because there should be no excitement in, oh, you came back from 23 down. You know why you came back from 23 down against the Mavericks? Because no team should be down 23 against the Mavericks. The Mavericks aren't that good. They entered last night in seventh place. They were 5-5 in their 10 games going in. So you put yourself in these situations where, yeah, you can make a run. The team you're playing against isn't good. You shouldn't be down 23 points to them. And you're totally right about Luka. I texted Giles during the game saying that too. I'm like, this is over. This is never not going to be over, because if you cut it to five, at some point that three is coming from Luka, and usually it's more than one three. And that, I know exactly which one you're talking about, where it was
good defense too. He was like at midcourt and he just kind of like got a little room. It was like, I'm just going to hit this. Like, the game is over. Didn't touch anything.
He just does that. That's very Curry-esque, where no matter how you're defending him, there can be just be that moment where he says, all right, F it, I'm shooting. And doesn't matter where he is, there's a good chance that's going in. So they weren't going to come back last night. There was no, and to everyone's credit, our show didn't spend a second on, oh, they almost came back. It was just all about, like, how are you discussing with the Celtics right now? And PGL was like that. And I guess that goes to back to, I like how the conversation is about the Celtics right now, because we should be flabbergasted and we should be annoyed. And I don't think that your coverage or anything has been a heel turn. It's just been, hey, we can make jokes and we can make jokes about other players and teams when the team's going well. But if the product is in front of us is terrible, we're still going to kind of have that same tone and we're still going to make jokes and we're still going to throw our hands up in the air. Like, shout out Scal for straight up laughing after that key for Marcus Smart. I have people in my mentions saying, what's wrong with, can you believe Scal's laughing? I don't see what's so funny about throwing the game away. And I was like, if you don't see what's funny about that, that's a you thing. We should be laughing at them right now.
You know, I think I told you, you should probably feel the same way with the Patriots coverage. Like, I don't come home and lose sleep if the Celtics don't win games. I want them to be successful selfishly from just a state of the business standpoint. Like, I want them to do well. I want there to be huge interest in this team. But I don't really sit here and obsess about, like, some of my friends, they take it personally when they lose. And I love that. That's what's great about sports. I used to be that way about the Patriots growing up. Like, every game, every loss hurt. Like, and that's the marvel of sports. And yet, when we do these post-game shows, and so, you know, when we got Scal and Perk both in, like, I don't come on until post-game plus. And so I have, like, you know, I'm listening to all the press conferences, but I got like 30 minutes to sort of stew and figure out what I'm going to come in and say. And last night, I'm like, I'm trying, you know, most of the time I come to a point where I like kind of get to a reasonable point where I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to be biting. I'm going to be a little bit sharp about, you know, them, what's ailing this team, but, you know, I won't be out of control. Last night, like, my blood pressure was out of control. Like, I just wanted to scream. I didn't even know if I made it. Like, after I made my initial, like, what I thought was like a fair calm point, I just started yelling. And like, that's what this team has done to me, because we all see it.
Yeah.
And they don't, or at least they're not willing to change their ways. And that's why I asked Perk. There used to be this great saying, you know, there's this photo of Paul Pierce hunched over in the weight room in Waltham at their old practice facility. And above him is this familiar saying. It just says, what hurts more, the pain of hard work or the pain of regret? And, you know, sort of, I always looked at the 2018-19 team and said that, but that was just like, that was a cluster F because of the roster makeup. This year, it's legitimately like they just don't want to work to make it right. And again, COVID has been as much of a issue for them as, you know, more so than any other team in the league, but everyone's dealing with something. And this team has not been able to push past it and figure out. I want to spin the conversation forward a little bit. Our friends at PointsBet, they don't have odds for, you know, which coach will be fired next. Some of the offshore bettings, you'll see that. But if they did, if they had odds on the fact that Danny Ainge or Brad Stevens would not be back next year, what do you think about the odds would be there? And is it fair to throw that in the conversation?
I mean, are we talking four digits? Are we talking plus 1,000? Are we talking plus?
I think it would be if only because we know, like, the security they have in their job, right? That, you know, it's hard for me to envision a Celtics team that puts so much of a premium on chemistry and continuity to just sort of blow this thing up because it went wrong this year. But you said it early in the show, it's at least part of the conversation that if this, you can't maximize it, something has to give. And so what gives?
Yeah. And I've been meaning to bring this up. There's no Patriots-ing your way out of this. You're not going to hit the off season and say, hey, well, look, we were bad. We really disappointed, but we do have all this cap space and here's how we can go sign these players. And obviously the comparison isn't direct because the Patriots signed, if the Celtics signed a bunch of players, the quality that the Patriots signed, just like a bunch of like okay starters, the Celtics also wouldn't be very good. You need more upper echelon players with the smaller roster. But you know what I'm saying? The Patriots were able to say, okay, here's our way of solving this problem. What's the Celtics' way of solving the problem? Another TPE? You're going to turn Evan Fournier into another TPE?
Are you excited about that?
Right. The TPE is the biggest racket going. And I don't know who came up with that idea with the Celtics. It's like, hey, let's just always have a traded player exception so we can always say, hey, the next move is around the corner.
Yes.
Just give us a little faith. Look, we did it forever with draft picks. People caught on to us. And now we got a bunch of players that are either in Maine or, I mean, God bless them. I'm still waiting to get my Romeo jersey, but I need to see my guy play a game or two. I don't think there's this obvious way of going about it. So yeah. If you're Danny Ainge and if you're the Celtics, is Danny Ainge going to fix this with a tough task ahead of him? I think it's unrealistic to think, okay, they're going to go into this offseason and they're just going to make a bunch of moves and it's all going to work out. They're kind of stuck right now given the Kemba situation.
Well, therein lies, like we've sort of alluded to it on this program a few times in the past couple of weeks. Like the Celtics essentially, by making the Evan Fournier trade, have sort of kicked tough decisions down the road. But it also added a layer where, if Evan Fournier is part of your future, then you're trading Marcus Smart or Kemba Walker this offseason. And I think the obvious choice is Kemba is not playing to the level of his contract. Some fault of his, you know, because of his body is not allowing him to do what he's done in the past. And so, you know, part of the reason they didn't splurge on draft picks at this trade deadline and throw a million picks at Orlando to get a Nick Vucevic, which we have both said would have been, you know, an ideal move, is because they're probably going to need those to tinker with this roster and to make the sort of fix the errors of their ways. And not that Kemba was an error. And I you know, there's always this chance that Kemba finds a little bit of a fountain of youth. I think he's actually played a little bit better than I expect. Like, he's not getting blocked at the rim nearly as much, but his outside shot is now faltering. So, you know, there's just this balance to it. But I think they have tough decisions ahead about how this thing is, what's the next step in this progress. I used to be able to foresee everything that the Celtics were going to do next. It was like, okay, they're going to go after Gordon Hayward. They're going to have another room for another star. Now, you know, no one saw Kyrie coming, but you understood it. Like, it made sense in the moment. You know, this is the first time where I sit here and say, I really don't know what their best step forward is. Like, we can guess, we could say it's move Kemba, but it might be no one wants them. You don't want to sacrifice picks. You know, you have to swallow hard on Marcus Smart. So it's just such a mystery about where they go from here. And then you start thinking, like, this window with Jalen and Jason is not promised. And so there's just tough decisions ahead. And I think that part, they put themselves in a little bit of a tough spot by the decision to sort of just shake it up with Fournier this season and with no promise that it'll deliver you to anything more than a playing game.
Yeah. And look, I mean, shout out Mo Wagner, shout out Kevin Garnett. But if you've gotten Vucevic, and I hear you on, I mean, you don't have a Wendell Carter, so you do have to kind of reimagine that. It would be tough to approximate Chicago's offer. But my thing all week was like, then just beat it. Don't say, okay, who's our Wendell Carter? Their first round picks would be, their two first round picks would be better. Okay, well then you're offering more than two first round picks, and then you're offering Time Lord and you're offering Pritchard, whatever it may be. If you went out and got Vucevic, at least you've got a clear cut. All right, we've got three stars now, and we're not even talking about Kemba, who we're hoping can be okay. Then you've got at least this window for the rest of the season to see, okay, can we just be a team that has three good players and then hope to God some lower level free agents, or I guess, I don't know, some people who want to pull a Montrezl Harrell or something will say, okay, look, you got the makings of a roster. You need me. I've made enough money in my career. I'm coming over there. We saw that happen with the Celtics back in the day with Eddie House, et cetera, et cetera. You can't really do that. You can't really do that if you don't have that third piece. So I would have tried a lot harder to get that third piece. And it drove me crazy that in a week in which he being Vucevic ends up going for less than we thought he would go for, all we were hearing about was Aaron Gordon and Evan Fournier. Like, I would have had my eyes more on the prize. And we got the reports after that. Oh, the Celtics were in on him. Well, he didn't go for much. So you could have gotten him. You could have offered Smart. You could have made it happen. Danny Ainge is way too smart, way too good at his job over the course of his career for us to say, you know what? There's just no way they could have found something that worked.
Yeah. And I think it's just part of they're looking ahead and they're saying, we've got some tough decisions. And even if you get a Vucevic, and you know, it's just a tough path to determine where they go from here. Let's try to finish on a positive note. Is there any sliver of you that says, all right, they get healthy, that Romeo jersey comes in the mail and Romeo look gives you a little something. Tristan Thompson comes back, at least gives you a little bit of what you thought you were like. Is there any roadmap to them actually being a contender?
Contender is tough because you look, they're still not far out of fourth place.
Right.
And even the Hornets, like the stupid part of my brain says, man, they're going to play the Hornets and they're going to beat them. Cause they're going to be like, you're the freaking Hornets. Look, it's been a weird season, but we can beat you. You're the Hornets. Honestly, dude, I'm not just trying to make your day, but is there like a rally around Time Lord type of thing where Giles has said this all year, because Giles is losing his mind watching the Celtics and watching the Bruins. And he's like, I guess the thing with the Celtics this year is going to be Time Lord got better. That's what we're going to take away from this season. But maybe Time Lord comes on strong enough that they're like, you know what? This is our third star. And something tricks their brains into realizing we've got good players on this team and we could be doing a lot better than we are. Maybe it's something like that that kickstarts it. But I'll say this as a Revolution fan, playing games can be a lot of fun. And playing games can kickstart a run where you get your back against the wall, you win, and then it's, we can do something, and then you're a contender. So I would say that the contender thing is lack of teams in the East that really are that good, but man, you were supposed to be one of them. So,
yeah,
man, not to be a dumb sports fan, but just like figure it out, guys. You've got two stars on your team. That's usually enough, even if you don't have a great supporting cast.
Yeah, I'll start my positive thought by going negative because I hear, when I put up my rant last night, I said the Celtics do not lack for talent. And that's part of the infuriating reason why, you know, it's been so hard to watch them lose this way. And I had a whole bunch of people pushing back and be like, nah, Danny put together a terrible roster. Look at spots 6 through 12. True. Like they don't have the depth that they probably expected. Jeff Teague fizzled. Tristan Thompson hasn't come close to expectation and has now been missing in action for 3 weeks because of protocol. Romeo Langford hasn't been healthy. That's all fair. But last night they still had Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, Evan Fournier. I understand Rob Williams wasn't out there, but like that still should be enough to beat the Dallas Mavericks. And it didn't happen. So can that core with a healthy Robert Williams, with potential bench upgrades if Romeo comes back, you know, with a healthy Semi Ojeleye, whatever, you know, is that enough to be something in the Eastern Conference? And I guess you always just sort of hold out this thought that it could be. You know, am I confident based on what I've watched? Of course not. But I also sort of just cannot unequivocally say that it could not potentially click. That Jason Tatum could be like, you know what? Yeah, I need to put in a little bit more effort. Like there's still another level for me to go to be a superstar. That Marcus Smart could say, man, I haven't been playing to my level. I can turn this up a little bit. I can be the defensive tone setter. I think there's a world where the Celtics do go on a surge. The problem is I thought it was coming this week. I thought it was going to be win two on the road, come home with energy, 7 in a row at home. All of a sudden you're on like an 8-game winning streak and you're like, yeah, we're back, baby. We're feeling it. And confidence is a huge thing. You know, like, but it just hasn't happened yet. Can it? Maybe. But the odds, every time they have one of these nights, I sit there and say, I feel less and less likely that that's going to happen. And it's just unfortunate because, again, do you want to put in the hard work or the pain of regret? And that's all I keep coming back to. They need to want to put in the effort. And I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know what the tipping point will be. Continue to shout until they listen.
It's going to need to be a pretty sizable grand run on which they go for people to take it seriously.
Mm.
Like hey, you win 2 games in a row. I don't think people are going to see 2 Celtics wins in a row and suddenly be like, ooh, okay, I'm a little intrigued now. I think that they're so soured on the experience and going back to 2018-19 even, I feel like they've been fooled so many times that they're like, this is going to need to be a sizable winning streak with dominant, you cannot stop Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They're taking turns going off for 35 mm-hmm. points a night. Kemba's back. Like, there needs to be a ton of good things happening for a sustained stretch. I think for people to not say, well, yeah, well, we know where this is going, though. This is crashing and burning. I think the skepticism has been well earned, but I think it's so high right now with the Celtics.
My one path that I was that I it sort of fizzled a little bit because everything's like LaMelo Ball gets hurt. So I always thought, I said, okay, the Celtics will surge. They'll get to the four seed. They'll play the Hornets in round one in an amazing 4-5 matchup where Rozier and Hayward and now Wanamaker are all out for blood against their old team. And the Celtics win that series. Then if Philly had stayed at the top of the Eastern Conference, you get the 4-1 matchup. And Philly's not going to scare them, right? Like they've owned them in past seasons, even though Philly's way better. You know, maybe the Celtics could sneak through there. And as long as they could avoid the Nets somehow, I felt like, you know, if they got Milwaukee in the Eastern Conference Finals, there's a roadmap to them actually being in the NBA Finals. No one saw Miami coming out from last year. It's all about playing well at the right moment and the cards kind of falling in the right places for you. All that being said, like I had to sit there and literally be like, all right, well, the Celtics going to get up to four, the six, like there's way too many hoops to jump through to feel really bullish about where they're going. So, you know, again, I don't mean for this to keep coming off as a depressing podcast, but it's where we're at.
We can have laughs though. Again,
yeah, we do. You can't take it too seriously.
It's good. I love the laughs when it's good. I like laughs when it's bad. So we can do whatever we can to entertain ourselves while we're watching this. Because I'll tell you one thing. For whatever reason, I'm not going to not watch them. Mm-hmm. I'm still going to watch them, and I'm going to know what's happening in real time. But I'm still going to watch them. I don't have anything else to do. If it's a Sunday, I don't know. It's like Sunday, 2 o'clock, beautiful weather. Celtics are on. My brain, I'm just watching the Celtics. I could think of other things to do, but I'm like, the Celtics are on. I'm going to watch this. And I'll probably text friends and laugh about it because it's become laughable at this point. But this to kind of paraphrase former President Barack Obama, this is what we do.
Well, what the Celtics do is they should take care of business on Friday night against the Houston Rockets, who are actively trying to preserve their draft pick. And but then Sunday, Easter, a little gift from the Easter Bunny as we get Gordon Hayward against the Celtics back in Boston, Terry Rozier, all that. I cannot wait for that matchup. Yeah. I look forward to ignoring my family and watching that from the studio where hopefully we just hold out hope that they turn it around and figure out how to be competitive for 48 minutes. Until then, you guys can go like, subscribe, leave a comment down the section, but try and cheer me up somehow. Tell me like why you're optimistic about this team. I don't get the sense based on reading social media that you guys are going to be positive, but I'll throw it out there. Maybe you can balance me out a little bit. I think what we're going to do on Monday, because I've just run out of the ways to vent. If you all want to submit some questions for on the YouTube page, you go to the YouTube page, you go to the podcast page, wherever you like, find us. Go ahead and leave a comment, leave a question, find me on social media, whatever it is. I'll put out a call for some mail later this week. Deej, feel free to slide in there and hit me with some questions about what this team should be doing. But until then, we'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk Podcast.